Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast.
On the left.
From your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Should we start the episode?
Let's do it.
Welcome to the show, everyone. That's Marcus Parks. I'm Ben Kissel. As always, from Los Angeles, we're joined by...
Semi-nude Henry Zebrowski. I am currently in a pair of basketball shorts and nothing else. I have sweat,
right?
Let's say, coursing through this my ridges.
I'm gonna go out on a limb. Body. Henry, did you play basketball today?
No,
you did not. Okay.
I played the game called Walk from the Bedroom to the Living Room because it is 109 degrees outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's unforgivable. I saw a raccoon out there with a lemonade.
That was funny. Oh, that is hot.
But then it had a seizure.
Oh, that's sad.
And we knew that was, it was in the throes of having some sort of brain tumor, and it was acting like a person.
Well, you heard that right out of the mouths of Henry, everybody. Sugar-free lemonade.
Sugar-free lemonade. Can you believe it?
Given that's
kids
right.
Seizures.
Got to get the sugar-free, otherwise you're going to have a raccoon seizure.
You're going to have a raccoon seizure. I am fucking hot here.
Good.
And I am going to say yes, and we were talking about a very special guest that's going to be on this week's A to Z that you don't know about.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you even what the theme is about.
Ooh.
But I can tell you that, let's just say, this man is no longer well-known, but...
Right.
is a man that sang a commercial parody theme song that struck the nation that runs alongside, topic-wise, what we do here at Last Podcast on the Left.
Would it be about ghosts or busting them or...
Shut your fucking mouth. Because NBC lawyers are literally just going to literally helicopter in through my fucking my roof. Like
right.
the NYPD way does.
Yeah, the way the ATF went through the Waco home.
Yeah, it's going to be me just down here with my four wives in their gingham dresses, and NBC lawyers are going to take our fucking shoes.
Well, you're so hot over there in Los Angeles, so let's get transported to a much different land with a much different temperature, the freezing cold land of Russia.
Oh. Today, and we got a big hitter today.
Finally.
Oh, I caught a foul ball. Child's uterus?
That's a different kind of baseball. That's the old Russian pastime of hitting a child's uterus out of the park. Andre Chikatilo, we're talking
about. The butcher of Rostov. Andre, the no bone zone Chikatilo.
This literally, pretty much as we'll go in, we'll discover this is all about something Viagra could have solved.
If
the Pfizer company was around and Viagra heard about Mr. Chikatilo's issues, I don't think we would have so many dead people lining the streets of Russia.
56 dead women and children between 1978 and 1990 in the Russian Soviet Federation Socialist Republic.
And so rolls off the tongue.
Absolutely. He was the most prolific Soviet serial killer. He was known as the Butcher of Rostov, the Red Ripper, the Rostov Ripper, also known as No Fun Mr. Uncle Man.
That's right.
So I was researching this, and I went to sleep, and I literally had this nightmare that was so vicious. And I never have nightmares. Normally, when I have nightmares, I see something scary in my dream, and I'm like, "Fucking cool!"
Right?
Because because that's how my brain works now. But I had a dream where I accidentally killed a baby, And it fucking ruined my day.
Ruined your entire day even, huh?
Like, I woke up, like, literally, because it was me, I had accidentally dropped a baby down a flight of stairs, and a baby rolled down a flight. It's really, I mean, yes, it's Marx Brothers-y, a little bit. But the woman shrieked and screamed, and then Eddie pulled me aside and was just like, buddy, just get out of here. There's no video. They can't prove you did it. It's our word against hers. Eddie's it was pretty perfect. Great.
I mean, why'd the woman hand you the baby? It's her fault. It's on the mother.
So this Andrea Chikatilo is, I would say, a combination, to be honest, between BTK and Ramirez.
And he's also got a fair amount of Gacy in him as well.
I mean, this guy, he's a hodgepodge of everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really is.
I don't think, I mean, I know that you did mention the Gacy thing earlier, Marcus, as well, but I can't see him clowning. and I can't really see him holding down a steady government job with the amount of dedication that BTK had to his craft of basically just being a paid annoyance.
Well, this guy... Andrea Chikatilo was an ardent communist. This is a guy who believed 100% in the ideals of Lenin, Stalin, and all of the other various Russian leaders out there. He was a government worker all throughout his life, and he definitely had a lot of the same personality traits as Dennis Rader. Not but liked by anyone.
Right.
No, he was liked by no one. He was considered perfectly average, but what he had was this thing was he really did believe... he was superior to people. And it's just the brutality of his crimes. I watched a bunch of it was like, you know, weird slideshows of the murder victims, like all the different crime scene photos. And they are fucking brutal. He was a monster. And he was the perfect... he was the perfect predator, and the fact that he looked like, again, very similar to sort of like an Albert Fish, where he looked like a kindly grandfather, like sort of unassuming man, and that's how he got his victims. He basically would call them out into the forest, and then he'd give them stabby stab, and then he would do a shooty shoot in his fucking probably white government issue Russian whitey tighties.
That's right. So next time you go and meet your grandfather, kids, check under his nails for blood. See if there's any dried blood there. But let's go into what created this monster. These are a lot of traits that we're going to talk about here in his childhood, similar to a lot of other serial killers that we've covered in the past.
Absolutely. He was born in 1933, I believe, in the Ukraine. When he was born, he had lesions on his brain. He had water on his brain, bit of a water baby, so he had the head injuries that a lot of them had.
Right. How does that water get there? Is it too humid in the womb? What happens?
That is funny. They need a dehumidifier.
Yeah, get it in there.
Water babies.
I mean, fix up
and
your womb, woman.
He was born
woman.
In the town of Yablokny.
Yeah.
What was that town?
Yablokny?
Yablokny?
In Sumy. Yablokny in Sumy Oblast?
I'm going to tell...
Yeah, you block me. You don't even know me.
I'm going to say that to somebody who cuts me in line while I'm waiting to buy a candy bar. You blocked me. What are you doing? Get behind me.
Also, let's just say that Leblockney was not necessarily a surfing town.
No.
You know what I mean? It wasn't like a... it wasn't a summer getaway.
Not a San Diego. The Saved by the Bell cast weren't going there for a random spring break situation.
Oh, no. Andrea Chikatilo lived and grew up in some of the most bleak cities and countrysides that Soviet Russia had to offer in the 20th century. He was born in the middle of what was eventually known as the Holodomor, which means extermination by hunger.
Yes, and it was Stalin imposed this with, like, well, they were basically... there was the forced collectivization of agriculture. So everybody that was working, everybody worked for the government, and anybody who grew anything had to send it to the main hub, and Ukraine got the least of it. So when he was, where he was growing up, this is the first instance we're going to really see this in a big hitter, is that, like, yes, a lot of these people have, like, child abuse and stuff like that, but he was literally born during a Holocaust. Like, he was born in the middle like, the people were eating each other
in order to live. This is child abuse on a grand scale. If you're a true communist, you believe the government should fill the role of your parents. And this is a very abusive government. But the interesting thing is, what you were talking about with collectivism, the only reward is they get to farm a little bit more.
Yeah.
They didn't get paid, but they're like, and you can work even a little bit harder and grow your own carrots.
Yeah, his parents received absolutely no wages for their work. The only thing that they got was exactly what you said. They got the right to cultivate a plot of land.
Right. No seeds or help doing it.
Just the right. And in this Holocaust, they say anywhere between 1.8 and 12 million Ukrainians died in this. They really don't know exactly how many died. But him and his sister, I mean, they survived by eating leaves. They ate grass.
Right.
Anything around. He grew up in enormous hardship, but despite this, was still an ardent communist. Loved communism. Believed in the Soviet ideal for his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
He believed that, again, if he followed the programming and did what he had to do, that he would, that it's fair that the you can see the seeds of his psychosis already being planted here, mm-hmm. where he was kind of brought up with this idea of that no matter what, it is fair and it's taken care of. And then basically you're going to find out that he constantly got the short end of the stick, never mind the fact that his dick didn't work.
Well, that's really the stick that
the shortest stick of all.
That's the saddest thing about the whole story. But it's very similar to what the people feel in North Korea. They think it's their fault that they're starving. They think it's their fault mm-hmm. they're not getting ahead, and they don't realize that they have no chance from the very beginning.
Oh, yeah. And
this is the worst town in Russia. I mean, the best town in Russia looks like that movie that Matt Forte was in, Nebraska. That's like a metropolis for the Soviet Union. This is the worst.
The best town in Russia looks like it's frozen in 1977, but the worst town in Russia looks like they're still digging like potatoes out of rock farms.
Right. The hard potato farms.
Well, Chikatilo, as he grew up, he was constantly told by his mother a story. She said that his older brother, who was born before him, had been kidnapped and cannibalized by starving neighbors.
Now go to sleep, Andrew. Andrew, now go to sleep.
Andre, are you asleep yet? Stepan was eaten like chocolate by Mr. Zempa. And then just a picture of Stepan on the wall and just him with golden braids and he's super fat and he was just like, oh, I couldn't possibly eat another sausage. Wait. And they were like, everybody's just watching like he was Kim Kardashian's butt.
That's the thing. Everything in Russia is slightly more depressing than it is here in the States. We had like Three Little Pigs. That's kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
I think theoretically, Three Little Pigs and then Little Red Riding Hood.
Yeah.
You know, the wolf ate a... her grandmother.
Yeah, ate the grandmother. You know. It was fine. You know, they cut her out, sewed up his stomach full of rocks, threw him in the river. That's not that bad, but it's not your not older right. brother was eaten was, by neighbors.
Right.
And I was also pretty traumatized by the fact that I never got that Ghostbusters firehouse.
Yeah.
So I understand where he's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping in step with a lot of other serial killers, of course, he was abused by his mother fairly badly, and he was a bedwetter. Which is typical. Another thing that we see in serial killers. And his mother used to beat him every single time that he wet the bed. And
how else are you going to make it super shameful?
Right, right.
You know, you got to beat him. Guys out there who's got... if you have kids, remember that. If they're wet in the bed, if they got a head injury, make sure you dress them in a dress and tell everybody that you bought them from a whorehouse for a bucket of bubblegum.
I mean, in Chikatilo's defense, the bathroom was probably just old pig bones. That was like in the corner of the living room or something, you know? He's like, well, might as well just pee here.
At the same time, we're in the middle of the Homoldivore. You got to be saving that pee and drinking it, am I right? Come on.
Oh, so you think it was his mother. These spoiled kids. Back in my day, we didn't waste any urine.
So in addition to growing up in the whole Holodomor, he also lived through the German occupation of Soviet Russia during right. World War II, which was particularly brutal.
Yes.
I mean, wait a second. I thought that they were part of the Nazi playground swing brigade that would go in and install playground swings and jumpy horses for the kids. They didn't get that program?
No, you read the wrong pamphlet.
He was more in the German soldier comes in and rapes my mother and she has an illegitimate child by him. Part of the German occupation.
Program C.
Yeah, different.
He must have checked off the wrong box when they got the paperwork.
Everyday life for him was corpses, blood, body parts everywhere. Him and his mother watched their little hut get burned down. And of course, you know, his mother was raped by German soldiers. He lived through all this stuff, and the entire time his father was being kept in a concentration camp, having surrendered to the Germans, which of course later on, Andre would blame some of his, you know, I guess, unsuccessful ventures into the Soviet world on his father being a POW yeah. captive of the Germans.
But that was just sort of the first Russian version of that television show, the home show, the renovation show, where the
this
guy
old
says,
house?
No, where the guy says, move that truck, and then they show everyone their brand new house.
Oh, I thought it was the other Russian show, My Raped Mom.
Yeah, no, that one was only on the air for 17 seasons.
But the other thing, but about the, basically, Stalin had a policy during his time, because his father was alive, basically they viewed anybody who was a prisoner of war as having allowed themselves to be taken prisoner.
Traitors.
So it was such a shame to have been imprisoned and survived. They thought right. that any Soviet soldier should either win or die.
Well, the policy also had the policy where the Soviet troops were aiming all their weapons at the farmers, the Russian farmers, being like, you know, fight. Or yeah. die. You know, it was a real damned yeah. if you do situation.
Yeah, there was a big reason why Russia had the largest casualties out of any army in World War II. Something like 11 million, somewhere around
there.
Well,
that was there. More. I thought it was
20. It was a 20. Absolutely. It was a ridiculously high number. The Russians have very little regard for life as far as their soldiers
and
go.
And I will
and
say.
And because of their natural stores of plutonium, a lot of these people are Siamese twins. So what we're looking at is right. sometimes people count as two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 40 million.
40
million. Everyone knows it.
So in September of 44, Chikatilo started going to school. Very shy, very studious, actually extremely intelligent. He was able to memorize long strings of meaningless numbers. They just give him a lot. Like, he was able to memorize pi up until a very high decimal point. Yeah. They would just give him these long strings of numbers and say, like, Andre, repeat them back to us, kind of like a little parlor trick. Unfortunately, right. extremely nearsighted. Couldn't see the blackboard. So school for him was a very stressful place, especially considering that he was bullied quite a bit.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why, though. It seems like he was Mr. Personality, especially when he couldn't get glasses, because the Russian glasses back in the day were just bigger letters. And if you couldn't get the letters bigger, like right. let's say, you know, because the chalk was too busy being used to feed babies, that they can't, you know, that's the problem. So he had a hard time seeing. He had a hard time school.
So he was a Linus type character. Mm-hmm. He had the stink lines coming off of him. Everyone knew he was poor.
Not you good. Know what he could have used was Pogs.
Pogs
got
been great.
Me a lot of friends when I was in middle school.
Pokemon might have helped him out a little bit, you know.
So one of the kids, one of his bullies, they claimed that his breasts were too big, and they all called him Baba. Uh-huh. Which is a derogatory term for women, and it stuck. So he yeah. was known as Baba, the big titty boy, for a very, very long time.
This has literally taken me back to day camp.
I know, man. If it wasn't for comedy, you know,
yeah, Jesus
Christ, the sheer abuse. I mean, I had visible bosoms at a young age as well.
Everybody did. Everybody. It's so weird to think.
Everybody
you did.
Kevin Barnett from the Round Table. Mm-hmm. People just called him Titty, I believe, for a little while. He didn't particularly enjoy that. Now he's got a television show.
And he wears very loose shirts.
Yeah.
Another kid happened to get a look at Chikatilo's penis while he was peeing one day. Started making fun of the right. shape of his foreskin. That got around the school. Question. So now everyone's making fun of the shape of his foreskin.
So he's got big titties and he's got weird foreskin.
Yes.
These are two things that are very sensitive for a young boy to have to deal with.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. This is I want to ask this question about if we have Russian listeners or people. Like, it seems like these kids start fucking in Russia really early.
Yeah.
And that they are very sexually aware really early. Because this is also where because he became known for being impotent during this time period, where it's just like, are kids just fucking by the age of 12?
I mean, they didn't exactly have the voice to go home and watch. You know, there wasn't American Idol. There was nothing to do.
Fucking in vodka. That's pretty much it.
Fucking in vodka.
Yeah, and just everybody's just getting, like, finger popped in the back of, like, by a fucking the cart full of yams.
Yeah.
And it's all just, like, everyone's just been like, oh, Sarka, stand still. I have to finger your rosebud before we are turned into soup. And it's like, is that cool? Is that good? Is that like the Sandlot for them?
Horador, that's the name of it?
The Holodomor.
Holodomor?
Holodomor.
I think their state bird is just fucking in vodka, and everyone's like, that's not a bird. They're like, I don't know anything else.
Also, again, I don't know what birds are. Holodomor is not exactly the poppiest name. If they really needed to have, if they wanted more awareness, it should have been called, like, Hunger is Now.
Yeah, Now is Hunger.
I mean, yeah, they need, like, a PR guy.
It sounds like a place that Frodo and Sam are trying to go to, and
yes,
there's
a ring
involved.
It does
sound
like a Harry Potter, like, gymnasium.
Yeah. Sort of
we must pass
token.
Through the swamps of Holodomor.
Yeah, Sam just picks up a drinking problem. Token story just derails. Frodo's just fucking all the chicks in town.
So Chikatilo grew up to be pretty big dude. Yeah. In fact, when he was a teenager, his nickname was Andre Silla, which means Andre the Strong, Andrew the Strong.
This is what I was...
It's better,
I'm
it's
sorry.
Better than when you remember when David Koresh was called Mr. Retardo? This is a better nickname.
Mr. I mean, it sounds like he should be wearing a towel for a cape and have a random sponge that he throws at kids.
Every time he eats jelly, he becomes 10 times his size.
That's my power sponge. But this is what's so great about this. This was a fairly short time period before he went from, you know, Baba, the big breasted boy, to
Andre the Strong.
The strong man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at 14, and I don't think he gave himself that nickname. They gave it to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was able, and he started getting manual labor in 1952 at the age of 16. He worked at a brick factory all summer.
That was the fun job.
Yeah.
Right.
In your block knee.
Unfortunately, part of a wall fell down on him, which may have contributed to a head injury. And then the next summer, he worked on a collective farm, and he was using a horse-drawn rake, and that also fell on him.
Everything was falling on him. Oh, this guy.
Well, at the age of 16, I was working in Hollywood Video, so I think I understand his plight.
Did you ever have a wall of videos fall on you?
No, but I did see, you remember that Outcast, that movie where it's like they're teaching each other to snowboard?
The Outsiders.
That was a travesty.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it. But guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Last podcast on the left is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With Squarespace, it's easy to create a beautiful website all on your terms. You don't want to miss Fluid Engine because if you do, it ain't coming back around. It is a next-generation website design system from Squarespace with reimagined drag-and-drop technology for desktop or mobile. So let's say we're doing well so far. We're moving these picks. If you want to move the Judge Reinhold non-clothed edition of a horse picks on the Clydesdale, you can drag it straight to your cart. It's that easy. You also can drag an entire giraffe ride trip for your family. Because daddy gets the back of the head, right? You just drag that from the option menu straight to your cart and don't delete because I'll know if you deleted. I'll know if you did it thanks to Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.com. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors. It's a waste. Don't waste hours on apps. besides appetizers. That's the kind of apps I like. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Did you know that empanada is already Spanish? I didn't. Thanks, Babbel. Did you know that burrito is already Spanish? Wow! I just got to learn all the rest. And eventually, I'm going to be eating downtown Mexico. Thanks, Babbel. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/left. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/left, spelled BABBEL.com/LEFT. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So, yeah. You know, he graduated. He was the only person from his collective farm to complete high school. And he graduated in 1954, great grades. And he was such an ardent communist that when Stalin died, he cried.
He was sad.
Yeah. And this is a man who instituted, this is how weird his thought process was, because this is the man that instituted policies that resulted in him having to eat grass and leaves. He said that right. He didn't eat bread until he was 12.
Mm-hmm.
But he believed in communism so strongly that there was this weird cognitive dissonance with him.
Yeah.
But John Wayne Gacy kind of suffered from the same thing. You know, like, this is the idea of, it's like, because they believe it's that being a part of the Communist Party would make you like a big man. He always had this superiority complex. And he thought at the time, because that's kind of what the propaganda was, is that if you join up with the company and you work with the state,
right,
they're going to take care of you. But of course, they just forgot about Ukraine.
Yeah, of course. So of course, as we mentioned many and many a time, impotence. That was the defining factor in Andre Ciccatello's life.
You'll see that from now on. And again, I guess goes back to prove the theories that as soon as the violent impulse is connected to the sexual impulse, these guys are done.
Yeah, absolutely. At the age of 17, this was the very first incident where he started to make that connection. He jumped on an 11-year-old friend of a younger sister, wrestled her to the ground, and as the girl just struggled, just came in his pants.
Right,
and that's
right.
called making a strudel. And that's an old term that people used to say. It's like any single time, you know, it's just like, oh, what's old Andre doing? It's, oh, he's out making strudels, you know. And it's just girls just had to cover themselves in yak milk so they'd be too slippery to be anywhere near him.
Well, you know, I mean, Andy Kaufman did a very similar thing.
What?
That was the only way that Andy Kaufman could come.
Oh,
was literally wrestling women.
That
all
is
he
true.
Would do is jump on them and grind on them. So at this point, I mean, he's just on his way to be sort of an abstract artist. You know, he just needs a comic strip to open up or Giggles to open up down the street. He'd crush.
Well, the man was absolutely terrified of women. If a girl sat next to him in class, he'd move.
Right.
And you also start to see at this time this connection that he has that comes later with equating sex with shame.
Yeah,
Not shame on himself, shame with other people. That
well, because he'd look at them. It was kind of like this thing. Because like I remember going through a period where I was like, you know, bigger and kind of would have dark thoughts and start thinking about stuff like that. Where you're just like, oh yeah, they're in love. Isn't that nice? And he'd basically just like watch people just being like, you're in love, huh? You love each other. Yeah. Huh? Well, I got nothing. You know, it's just like just pull on this fucking spaghetti strand. And he's got nothing going on downstairs,
right.
And it makes a man angry.
Yeah.
You remember going through that time? Or you're going through that time.
Yeah, all I do is my big thing is I like to go to dog parks, and what I do is I make tuna sandwiches and I just fucking throw them at couples walking dogs.
And the dog loves it, I'm sure.
Oh, dogs are having a great time.
Yeah, gets to eat all that tuna sandwich.
You know, Ciccatello was a good looking guy. He had no problem getting.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, he was.
I'd go as far
again,
as call him good.
Okay,
or let's. Hormidor or whatever the name
remember,
of his town was.
Remember the context, Henry. We're talking Soviet Russia. We're talking 1950s Russia here. By those standards, Andre Ciccatello, good looking guy.
It was like no picture ever looked like, you know. Like an American Eagle ad. You know what I mean?
No.
That never accidentally happened over there.
Well, he was good looking enough where he could still get women to, once he eventually got over that initial fear, he could still get women to, you know, at least get to the point of possibly having sex with him.
Yeah.
But he just couldn't ever stay hard.
Well, he was a hell of a chef. Hell of a cook.
And girls teased him about it all the time, just constantly. Every time that he couldn't get hard, the girls would always tease him about it, which that just built up the rage inside of him.
And we'll say, if you're on a date with a guy and he takes you home and then you find out he's got a very small penis or he can't get hard, laugh after. Get out.
After.
Then just laugh
after. Be very concerned and supportive in his presence,
right.
And then you can call him Pickle Dick.
Right, pickle dick for the rest of his life. Yeah, totally. Everyone will be on your side. Yeah. It's just a friend of mine went home with a fella who had a micro penis, and man, she was a real actress that night.
Yeah,
because I mean, you just want to laugh.
You have to be sensitive.
No, you got to.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also, the story of Gumby was loosely based on the life of Andre Ticatello as well.
It was based on his penis, I believe.
Yes.
Well, it wasn't all sadness and, you know, Soviet moods for Andre. In 1957...
Soviet moods needs to be a candle scent. Maybe light up that Soviet
it's just
moods.
Like the sounds of, like, rocks being tumbled down a fucking weird oil-filled gully, and then these people
love.
My yak is blind.
Well, he did make one friend, and this is a man who really didn't have any friends throughout his life. There were some people that he worked with later on that didn't mind him, but it seems like the only friend he ever had was an Austrian guy that he met at a international youth festival in Moscow in 1957. He had a pen pal.
The thing about him that's interesting, he was going out and trying to meet people, very much like Dahmer. Opposite of the man that you have on your t-shirt, Ed Gein.
Yes.
You know, who was more of a shut-in, just a grave robber for the most part, other than the two kills.
Oh, yeah.
But he did try to be social.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's because he was kind of raised, he just kind of thought that he could do it. Like, because that was his whole thing. That's why he got into getting into his own education. And that's what he's, and that's why he joined the army, which we'll talk about soon, is that he thought he could better himself because he thought he was a genius. He kind of had that BTK syndrome where he just thought that he was better than everybody else. And that eventually that became poisonous.
And like BTK, who worked for the state, and like, Gacy, who was a Democrat, by the way, of course, that is the closest thing to a communist that we have here in America. But they feel like if they have the power of the state behind them, they can get away with anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as his mindset goes, he was eventually diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which we see in...
Borderline?
Yeah, we see that in a lot of serial killers.
Is that like the personality Madonna song, Borderline? Is that like the Madonna song, Borderline?
Yes, it is.
It's exactly like the Madonna song, Borderline.
I'm just saying, if you're a doctor in this situation, go full-on personality disorder. Why borderline it?
No, borderline is the name of the personality disorder.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I hate to say this, Mr. Ciccatello, but we've got your test back, and apparently you've got frowny fever.
Best doctor.
Oh, it's also followed up with a case... it's spaghetti pants. I'm sorry. You have spaghetti pants. I'm very sorry.
So you're saying I'm depressed with a limp dick?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, borderline personality disorder, it's definitely marked by an extreme inability to form relationships with other people. Their emotions are extremely turbulent. They see signs where signs aren't there. They get overly attached to people every once in a while. And in extreme cases, it can definitely lead to violence. I once dated a girl with borderline personality disorder. There was knives involved at one point.
It's like, that's what they said at the same time. It's very similar to being like a diagnosed psychopath, where they talked about... I've been reading this great book called The Psychopath Test, which we kind of covered a bit of it when we took a version of the psychopath test 2 years ago on last podcast. But the big thing they say about psychopaths is when you test them, basically they were doing this series of tests, and what they would do is warn them they were going to get shocked. And they took people that were diagnosed as psychopath and people that were not, and basically gave them a countdown, and they measured their brain waves as they were about to receive the shock. And basically, a normal person would experience apprehension before the shock happened, but a psychopath would not. They would literally just sit there calmly and then go, and he said they would let out a form of shriek, and they'd literally just go like, ah! And then they would be fine.
Right.
But they said that the way their brains are, it's like, so it's again, Andre Ciccatello suffered from this thing of like, with them, you know, they say when you read like symptoms of being a psychopath, if you feel nervous that you are seeing these symptoms pop up in your own life, you are not a psychopath.
Yes. Right.
Because you're feeling nervous.
Well, I would call it, I would just call it the put me in coach syndrome, because yes, it seems like something a great middle linebacker in the NFL would have, you know, and be like, I know I'm going to get hurt. Yeah. Yeah. Put me in, coach.
So Andre joined the army, compulsory military service, as you know, all Russian men had to go through at the time. But this, when he's in the army, this is when he really gets his first taste of violence and sexuality together. He was on a date with a girl. He started cuddling her. She told him, stop, I don't want this. But as she tried to push him away, he just squeezed harder and harder. And the more that she struggled and the more she screamed, the more turned on he got. And of course, eventually, and I will be saying this sentence a lot, ejaculated in his pants.
Right. Yes. He did a lot of ejaculating into his pants.
Yeah.
Yes, he was making strudels all over Russia. This was also known as the Ben Kissel maneuver.
I mean, I've never come a day in my life. So, I'm constantly hard, though, because I went to the wrong warlock when I was 17.
So after he got out of the army, he went back to his native village to live with his parents, started dating this girl who was divorced from her husband. But in the course of a three-year relationship, he could never get an erection, could never achieve intercourse. And so the girl, like, innocently just asked her friends, like, hey, like, how do I get him hard? Like, he won't get hard. How do I do it? And, of course, as soon as she asked her friends this, the word that Chikatilo couldn't get a hard-on spread all around the village.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm. He tried to kill himself because of it. He tried to hang himself.
But I mean, I feel like that happens so often in Yablokhna. It's like not even, that's what he said. But like he says here, he was like, God knows what's going behind my back. What is praying that I was impotent? I was so ashamed. I cried to hang myself. My mother and some young neighbors pulled me out of the noose. I had to run away from there, away from a homeland.
Homeland.
Cumland? Did you say Cumland?
You said homeland. You said Cumland.
Oh, I'm sorry. My homeland. I'm so embarrassed.
That's Russia, though. I mean, the machismo culture, you know.
Yeah.
Women want you to be hard all the time over there. That's why they drink so much whiskey, just to let it go to sleep every now and again. Or vodka, rather.
Vodka, oh, yeah. And, of course, after this incident, he said he had to move out of his homeland. He had to move.
Because he had erectile dysfunction.
He had to move to Russia. From the Ukraine into mainland Russia, he got a job as a communications engineer in Rostov-on-Don.
Cue the moving on up theme from the Jeffersons, if you would, Marcus.
When you said that, I just pictured his penis trying to get hard so bad.
Moving on up.
Yeah, you would have hated that song.
Oh, yeah.
So Rostov, to give a bit of a background on this town, Rostov would be where Andre would commit the majority of his murders from 1978 to 1994. Rostov was a bleak town. 92. Even by Soviet standards, it was a bleak town.
It wasn't a beautiful metropolis.
What?
No, it was said in Russia that if Odessa is the mother of crime, then the Rostov is its father.
Right. I mean, that's so sad. Going back to this woman, though, ratted him out for not being able to get his bone up. Out of all the disgusting Russian men that were around her constantly trying to bang her with huge hard-ons, don't you think she would have appreciated a more sympathetic penis?
Absolutely not. As you'll see, as you'll start seeing, once we really get into his victims and the type of women that he eventually started, you know, killing, then you'll see that the attitude of, it's really in Soviet Russia at this time, it's really strange because there's a very puritanical attitude towards sex going on outwardly. But as far as people just actually fucking, it happens a lot.
Like
they used to use the term, like the euphemism at the time was relaxing. Let's go somewhere and relax.
Maybe he just took it literally.
Rostov was, it's one of those places in Russia where it's a magnet for all the smaller settlements around it. So it's a very transient town. There are people constantly coming in and out. So it makes it very difficult for police to track people.
Mm-hmm.
So someone may be in the town for a week and then they'll leave. So it's the perfect place for someone like Andre to kill as many people as possible.
We're also going to find out later down the line he got a perfect job too, which took him traveling all over remote parts of Russia so that he was committing crimes all in a huge space.
Yeah.
Because he was traveling by public transportation on these weird choo-choo trains run on fucking tubers. I don't know what they
have. Yeah, I think it was tubers.
Like being pulled by men attached by chains. I don't know. Russia is bad. It's a bad place.
But, you know, I mean, it's interesting. He worked at a brick factory, and, of course, another person who was very good at building bricks, H.H. Holmes. Anytime you, and, of course, he had just fluid people coming, you know, in and out. And then, of course, he was traveling as well. So it is a perfect storm. If you want to kill, especially back then where everyone wasn't tracked like they are now.
When the facial recognition software takes all of our photos from the selfies that we're all taking.
I know what's happening.
We all know it.
So, of course, once he gets to Rostov, his troubles with women don't start. And this is another thing that he shares with BTK. He's definitely a fucking nerd. One point, he found a woman that he very much liked. He had a big crush on her. But instead of telling her that he liked her, he instead wrote an article for the local newspaper praising her as a model worker.
That's very romantic.
Well, let's just say that is technically the Russian... That's the Russian OkCupid.
Yes.
Since you write a very stoutly worded recommendation to the community newsletter.
I mean, in his head, he's like, step one, I'll do this. I'll write this letter and then the local newspaper about how beautiful this woman is. If that doesn't work, I'll tell her how many numbers I know of pi. So I really hope the newspaper thing works.
I'll just wrestle with her until I come into my pants.
Yeah. Okay, probably go back to option three there.
Well, option four was masturbating constantly.
Okay.
Which he did, and anytime he was struck with the urge, he had to masturbate immediately. His job at this point was a communications engineer, which he worked on repairing telephone lines quite a bit, and he did that in the woods quite often, which the woods would eventually become the place where he felt most comfortable killing people. So it's at this time that it's possible that connection between sex and the woods was made, because he would just wander off into the woods to masturbate. But one day, unfortunately, the nearsightedness that we mentioned earlier got the best of him as he walked away from his workers who were having a bit of a lunch break. And he thought that he was out of sight because he could not see them.
Well, he put it on his invisibility cloak, which means he urinated on his pants. Yes,
and he got that from the wild fields of a Moldavore, from his magical fucking realm that he's lived in. Mm.
So, unfortunately, they could still very much see Andre, and he started openly masturbating in the woods, at which point the group leader saw him and yelled, "Andre goes into the woods to masturbate!"
No, that is not clever.
It's not clever. They're Russians,
but also,
again.
This whole thing, it feels like a bit from a Marx Brothers, like the most depressing Marx Brothers movie, where the Marx Brothers are forced to eat their youngest Marx Brother as babies, and then now they work for a brick factory and they masturbate in the woods.
Loses his glasses. I mean, he should have just looked at him and been like, "Who's hard now? Who's hard now, men?" He could have played it up.
Nothing makes men respect you more.
Oh, yeah. Why are you looking at me?
Them about how hard you are.
I mean, I feel like he could have had that counter-argument in both situations with the foreskin and the masturbation. Why are you looking at me, guys? Yeah. Why are you looking at my dog? You know?
He was not clever at comebacks.
No.
Very embarrassed man. Very easily embarrassed.
I will say that is an embarrassing thing to get caught doing.
It is extremely embarrassing to get caught masturbating in the woods on your lunch break. Yeah.
Yeah. On the lunch break, yeah.
It's hard. That goes on the progress report.
Yeah.
That's not gonna miss the fucking evaluation sequence. Also, he's starting to kind of sound like a comedian who travels for work.
Yeah.
Oh, I will say that.
So 1963, he finally gets married to a woman called Feodosia Olnatieva.
Mm. I'm gonna also put this out there. In Feodosia, lovely woman.
Mm.
Falls into the serial killer, like, sort of the normal category for the serial killer beard wife, which is known as she's handsome.
Right.
You know, let's put it that way. She's a handsome woman.
Right. Right. I mean, it is very interesting. I like that. There is a similarity there. Serial killer beard.
Yeah.
That is definitely a real thing.
And he used this woman as his beard for years and years and years in a number of different ways. He described it as pretty much an arranged marriage. He got married to her 2 weeks after he met her. It was set up by his younger sister and her husband. And, of course, he couldn't fuck his wife any more than he could fuck any other woman.
Right.
He did father 2 children by her, but the only way he was able to do that was by jerking off into his hand and then sticking his semen-stained fingers in her vagina.
Holy shit, that gets a woman pregnant?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, not
and happy. In Russian, that's called a broshkargarsh, which yeah. means... putting in the mail slot, loosely.
Yeah.
And so it's at this time that, you know, the urges that he has, his fantasies start getting stronger and stronger. He can't, it's almost starting to become unbearable because nothing's happening with his wife. And he's starting to feel ineffectual. And of course, the Soviet ideals that he had in his head, as we said earlier,
right.
it's strength above all. That you are, the Soviet state gives you strength. You are a superhuman. You too can be the Man of Steel. Everyone is equal. So if you are equal to Stalin, then you are also a Superman. So eventually it just kind of developed into like strength for strength's sake.
They had a very like core ape-like brain. That's also one of the reasons they lost the war, because all of their tanks were so massive and clunky and stupid, mm-hmm. and they used so much gasoline that they were completely ineffective.
Yeah.
But they liked the noises.
They loved the noises. Oh, that's a big one. Ah, oh, yeah, I love that big one. I mean, they're just like Neanderthals, these guys.
But I will say that they were a very brave people during World War II. They just, they were just all fucked up. And everything got fucked up.
Yeah.
So 1970, he did a correspondence course. He got his degree in Russian literature and started...
Which was just being able to read the pamphlet that they handed you at the time.
Right.
And then right before he got the degree, he managed regional sports activities for about a year.
He was a manager of regional sports activities in Russia?
Yes.
Cool.
Which is called like, yeah, it was a kick gasoline canister to nearby mine factory.
Yeah.
And
love that.
And another
game.
Great sport, which was just called like man with no legs is dragged by cart.
Sort of the old chariot races there, yeah.
Well, you know, it's appropriate that you mention mines because he eventually got a job in a town called Novoshakhtinsk. Novoshakhtinsk.
Nothing is like the beautiful hills and valleys of Novoshakhtinsk.
Right.
Oh, beautiful Novoshakhtinsk.
You know how much fun it is to...
There's almost 4 puddles of water there.
I love it. I've just been really appreciating the name Wyoming throughout this entire episode.
And these were all mining towns. There was a neighboring town called Shakhty, which Shakhty just means mines.
That's believe me. My favorite town in California is this great place. It's just called Porter Potties, and what it is it's just
place.
4 porter potties, and a guy calling himself the mayor is sitting on top of the porter potties.
Yeah,
and he says this is the sister city to our place, a place called Grakharsh in Russia, that also means porter potties.
Porter potties, that's great, but it's just a bunch of beds there in Russia.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. All those emails, reports, and presentations are equally important to the collaboration needed to get things done. And Grammarly can help. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. And isn't that what matters most? Better writing means a stronger impact. Grammarly works across 500,000 apps and websites. You can't escape it. Like the ever-pervasive octopus of malice that is the NSA. Grammarly is watching your every move, making sure that you're doing it right. Data privacy and security are woven into the foundation of Grammarly, into the very essence of its nature. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner, and it helps your team make their point and move faster, because that's the key there. Work smarter, not harder. Yes, Grammarly. You know how many times it saves me from writing a long, rambling, one-sentence email at 4 o'clock in the morning to my beloved employees? Makes me sound like someone who doesn't just have a BA in theater. All right, I was taught how to be a tree. I was not taught how to survive as an adult. All right. My job was to cry in front of a weird Southern man who just told me all sorts of weird stuff about my body. I didn't learn how to write. So thank you, Grammarly, because you're making me the boss I gotta be to motivate my team to get out there. And, oh, man, you don't want to mess with them. Thanks, Grammarly. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So, of course, Chikatilo was a terrible teacher.
He was awful. What? He didn't relate to the children?
Bill Nye the Science Guy?
What?
He's no Bill Nye the Science Guy?
Crazy. I thought he'd find funny anecdotes and like creative ways to inform people about science.
Yep.
It's a special book. We have one read. It's called How to Grab Struggling Girl and Make Shoot in Your Crocky Pants.
This is supposed to be Math 101.
Everybody read the pamphlet I wrote.
Okay, Mr. Chikatilo. His students described him as introverted, uninterested, and unpleasant.
The three worst things you could describe a teacher as.
Colleagues hated him, and one of the reasons why they really didn't like him, and apparently this is a way to cause distrust in Russia, is that he didn't like vodka. He wouldn't go out and drink with them after work. And he rarely drank.
That's what they said. I was one of the investigators. I was watching this great, the Biography Channel doc on Chikatilo, and they were talking about how like his wife was actually pretty happy with him when they were married because they were. And he literally, this detective, he's like, "Well, you know, he didn't beat her, and he wasn't drunk all the time, which happened to be the status for the Russian husband during the 1960s."
I think if he could have just communicated what he liked, because he could get hard, but he just wanted to grind and wrestle. I mean, a woman would be okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, but at the time, like that's the weird thing about sexual repression in societies is that at the time, it was easier for him to rape and murder a woman in order to come than it was to tell your wife, "Hey, I like things a little rough."
Yeah, yeah. He didn't get Maxim back then.
Yeah, that's true. There's no Pornhub or anything. He was just giving her the old sweaty palm. The sperm inside of it.
So in 1973, that's when Chikatilo committed his first sexual assault on one of his pupils. Him and a lot of his pupils were swimming around in a pond in Shakhty.
They mean gas canister filled with dirty water, right?
Yes.
It's Russia.
So he swam towards a 15-year-old girl, groped her breasts and genitals, and the more she screamed, the more exciting he found it. So he just touched her more and more, got her closer and closer until she screamed, until of course he ejaculated into his pants.
I would say this: if you do meet Mr. Chikatilo, act like he's a bee. Stand still. Don't say anything. Just stand still. He'll leave eventually.
Or the other thing to do is just go like, "Ooh, I like it.
I like it, Mr. That's not Chikatilo.
Nothing makes him softer."
Or do what Arnold Schwarzenegger did in the great feature film Predator: cover yourself in mud. Again, don't move. Don't move.
In another incident, girls say he would just stand there. He would act like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Is this the girls' dorm? I didn't realize you girls are undressing for bed." And then he'd just stand there with his hand in his pocket, obviously masturbating while looking at
him. Oh, he was doing the old porkies.
Yeah.
And by the way, he wasn't disciplined for any of these.
Okay, but let's get into that because that's what's super interesting.
Yeah, he was. Well, before we get into that, there's one more incident. Another time there was a girl that was a problem student. He kept her after class and he whacked her in the small of the back with a ruler until he ejaculated into his pants.
Ejaculated in his pants again.
Pants.
Did he only have one pair of pants?
Yeah.
Or is there multiple pairs of pants?
I think he's just got the one and you don't want to see him when they're inside out.
And he wasn't disciplined for this either. And this is a very interesting thing because, as we'll see over the course of these next couple episodes, is that the reason why Chikatilo was able to operate for so long had a lot to do with the Soviet system, the collectivization of the Soviet peoples and the types of things that they would do this school if they would have reported Chikatilo's sexual assaults. Since it was a collective, they would all be punished for it.
Right.
If someone did something good, then everybody would reap the benefits. But if one person did something bad, then they would all be punished for it, specifically the director of the school.
So they would just shuffle him around.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's not too dissimilar to the view that the Catholic religion has with the priests, with the idea of, like, if we out, because the reason why they hide these priests is because if we out them, everyone's going to start viewing us as a sea of molesters.
Right.
And what they just don't understand is that we already know that. Just to see a molester.
Right. I mean,
well, they didn't even shuffle him around. He just went to another area where they had never heard of him. There was no, there was no communication between these schools. He gets fired at one school. He just goes to another one. And they wouldn't even fire him. They just say, like, all right, either resign or you're fired. One of the two. Just get out of here.
Well, it's about protecting the shield. Same thing with NYPD officer, or not even NYPD, any sort of police officer or stuff like that. They, get in trouble in one station, one police station, and go to another one without anyone even noticing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very common.
Very common. And you also ask, what about his wife? His wife knew about all of this, and actually, when asked about one of the incidents, she just said offhandedly, just laughing, "What do you know? He obviously wanted to try out someone younger."
Isn't that, and she was also working in a screenplay called Everybody Loves Chikatilo, and it was going to be a family sitcom with a laugh track.
Yeah, which featured his tall, mopey brother who was like, "Everybody loves Chikatilo."
Always.
And he always, because he's always with the fingering and the mushing of the baby breast, and I have to work at the rock, of kindergarten, where we treat rocks like they are children.
Huge. Oh, I love that sitcom. Yeah.
Great show.
I love it.
So because Chikatilo was never, none of these things were ever reported, there was no record.
Well, he was too busy filling up the newspaper with love articles.
Well, none of them were reported. And since he never got into trouble with this, and since he was able to go from school to school, he got a very clear message. Do whatever the fuck you want,
right,
and you will never get in trouble.
Absolutely, and it helped to solidify his superiority complex.
Yes.
Being like, they can't catch me, which is what we see all the time, which is like with serial killers. Like, once they start to feel that security of, like, I'm invincible or I'm invulnerable, that's when they start letting the freak flag fly.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was also that great great sitcom based off of this called Welcome Back, Kotter. Originally, it was called Welcome Back, Chikatilo.
And that was, and again, in the Russian version, it was bleaker and longer. And
right. Yeah.
In 1978, he got a job as a teacher at a hostel. And strangely enough, his job at the hostel, teaching morality to young boys.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, very perfect. He got caught giving one of them a blowjob as the kid slept.
That's the old problem there.
Was that the first gay experience that he had?
As far as we know.
Okay.
Yeah, as far as we know.
But we can assume that during his travels, he probably had done some.
I mean,
like H.H. Holmes used to do when he went to Cleveland, Ohio.
His victims aren't exclusively women. He killed a lot of boys, too, a lot of teenage boys.
Yeah.
And here's another weird thing about Chikatilo is that, and I think this also speaks to the Soviet system at the time, he was extremely fucking good at working the system. He knew how to get things done in Soviet society. When he got to, while other people would struggle to get like a one-bedroom hovel, he was able to get a 4-bedroom apartment on school grounds.
Right.
While
that's
other
pretty
people,
cool.
Yeah, while other people like struggled to get a shitty 2-door car, he was right. able to get a luxury vehicle. Like, he just knew how to work the system. So
well,
it kind of says that you had to be kind of a psychopath to navigate the Soviet system at the
time. Andrei Chikatilo is to communism what Dov Charney is to capitalism. The guy for American Apparel.
Yeah.
He's been benefiting so much. He is a sexual predator by definition.
Yes.
But
that's what they do. It's what they say. I forget what the actual term is, but it's how you basically going mad in mad circumstances just makes you sane.
Right.
Yeah.
And every government system is insane in to some degree.
So in 1978, and this is rare, and I don't believe that we've covered so far as our heavy hitters goes, I don't think we've covered anyone who waited this old for their first murder. In 1978, at the age of 42,
wow,
Andre finally gets in his first kill. He buys a little sex house on the edge of Shakhty.
No, he also bought this house. What is interesting is that he got this house basically because he had gotten this job using for the Russian government. And what his job was is that because it was this weird thing with various manufacturers were basically said they promised to give this much each month. And his job was just go from factory to factory and make sure they were going to deliver this stuff. Basically, just all he did was collect promises from businesses. And then he got this extra income and he bought this house of Shakhty. Now, this house was supposed to be for his father to retire to. But then we find out that he used it for a little bit of a love shack. If you could please cue love shack.
Yeah.
So this house, he of course tried out before. He didn't get straight into murder after he bought the house. He would lure prostitutes and drunks back to the house to try to have sex with them. He's starting to feel out his eventual MO. He's starting to feel it out. Right. He's starting to get good at it. He brings 3 different 6-year-old girls back to the house and molests them. And then on December 22nd, 1978, he finds little Yelena Zotnova, 9 years old. She was walking back home from school. He started having a conversation with her. And as Henry said earlier, he had a very grandfatherly attitude towards him. He was able to get people to trust him.
Because he also seemed like a nothing.
Yeah.
That's a big thing about these guys. We see that with Dahmer, when they said that about Dahmer, and they said the same thing about Dennis Rader, is that they're perfectly nice, but it's like there's nothing. Like it's like you wouldn't even think twice about considering him being, I don't know, dangerous, never mind like nice. It's like he's just a nothing.
Yeah. The whole situation is so much more disturbing to me now because I can't get the B-52s out of my head. And so now I just hear, I don't want to hear that song ever again because I'm just going to think of Chikatilo, 6-year-olds, 9-year-olds.
It's going to get much worse. He tried to rape the little girl. As soon as she gets in, he takes her down to the floor. He covers her mouth. And of course, he can't get hard, so he tries to shove his soft penis into her vagina. Her hymen breaks, and when her hymen breaks, this is his first sight of blood. And as soon as he sees that blood, he immediately ejaculates. And this is, for the first time, this is when he realizes that the sight of blood turns him on more than anything else in the world.
I will say that this is also, I to be honest, I can't help but feel that a part of this is due to the fact that Russia was never allowed to get ketchup.
Yeah, that's true. It was a mustard country. And if you're a mustard country, it's when you're one of the sadder countries around.
I'm sorry.
No, but that is
yes. And it gets worse. Wanting to replicate that.
Was he hard, do you think, when he ejaculated? Because you don't have to be hard.
No,
really.
No, he was never hard.
You're right.
It wasn't about the hard. It was about the shoot. He never got to experience the feeling of orgasm until it happened.
Yeah. And it gets worse. He figures out, like, okay, it's definitely the blood that made me came. I want that to happen again. So he gets out a little knife that he had started carrying around with him after a bunch of his students tried to beat him up in an alleyway.
I wonder why.
Probably just dickhead.
The kids wanted to learn that bad.
Now, that's how Russia is, that a bunch of kids can surround a teacher in an alleyway and beat the shit out of them. But after he grabs the knife and just stabs her in the stomach over and over again, by the time he's done, the body is barely recognizable. And he said later, after he had done that, he said that he felt as if he had been freed from the shackles which had bound him.
So that was really his Susan Boyle moment, when everyone just looked at him like an elderly man who had no talent, and then he opened up his knife and showed the world what he could do.
Yep.
And so he took the body, and he panicked. As soon as he had the come down, like, he panicked. Right.
It was the same thing with Dahmer on his first kill.
Yeah.
When he do it in the passion and the throw of the moment, and then what the fuck? And then you immediately wake up and you're like, what did I do? Because that's why they talk about all the time. The separation of your personality. You can compartmentalize and you put that in a little section. And you don't think about the man part of you that killed the little girl.
Well, I don't think that Dahmer could really compartmentalize like that. I think he was just like, beer me.
Yes.
As soon as he would come, beer me.
That's why I've always had sympathy for Dahmer, because he had to medicate himself so hard just to even do it.
Yeah.
But this does seem like a strange leap for him. Why all of a sudden the kids? Is it just access?
I mean, no, he had been molesting kids for years and years.
But as young as
this
six
has
and
been,
nine?
This has obviously been a thought in his brain for a long time.
Yeah,
He's the way they talk about it in the confession when they get it later on, is that he liked to say it's like spur of a moment. But even investigators were saying it's like this is obviously a fantasy he had and he had built
and
for a long time.
Yeah, he had molested his wife's niece. Back in the day, he had been molesting kids of all ages. It was about
the Dahmer
power.
Thing. It's the exact same thing. Dahmer had the same fantasy about picking up the hitchhiker and bringing him back to the house. And then it's basically the fantasy just came through for him. And then all of a sudden it's like your dream is now alive and you're living in a dream world doing the thing you always kind of thought you would do, but then never believing it actually happened.
Minus the fact that he did work in a brick factory, which is the Russian equivalent of working in a chocolate factory. I think that he is more BTK.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely more BTK. And so he has the body on his hands. He doesn't know what to do with it. So he just takes it outside. He throws it in a river behind his his shack, and they find her 2 days later. And this is the first, with his very first murder, he almost gets caught. And we'll see this over and over and over again. He gets almost caught because this starts from 1978 to 1992. I mean, this starts a 12-year murder spree.
What you find out is that in Russian law enforcement, they really want you to have a criminal past.
Yeah.
And so it's like everybody they were looking at, the reason why basically he slipped their attention was because he was never on the books for molesting kids for years as a teacher.
Yeah. And there was a ton of evidence linking Andre to this. There was a spot of blood from the little girl's body on snow outside of his house. There was testimony from neighbors that they saw Andre there that night.
Yeah.
There was testimony from neighbors that said that they had seen him entering the house with young girls prior to that. There was even a witness saying that Andrew talked with the little girl the day of the murder. However, Soviet police went ahead and arrested a guy named Alexander Kravchenko instead. He lived a few doors down from from the sex house, and he had been convicted of murder in Crimea 7 years previous.
Never mind the fact Andre just kept going, like, every time you'd be like, hey, Boris, hey, how you doing, bro? How you feeling, man? Yeah, you remember that little girl I had there yesterday? That little tiny girl I brought into my weird fucking broke down, like, fuck shot? I fucking killed her, bro. I was down fucked up. All right, I'll be seeing you, Boris.
I just had the strangest conversation with Mr. Chikatilo? I never even met him before there.
Well, either way, I'm cat-sitting for him next week. So.
Yeah, it'll be fine. But if they would have indicted him, if they would have accused him of this crime, it would have been accusing the entire school, the entire community, right?
Well, this had nothing to do with the school itself. Like, they didn't.
Well, now he's sort of a made man. He's kind of a Russian made man at this point, because that's what they said. Because each time you're also going to see his ties to the Communist Party got him out of everything.
So
you could also could imagine solidified that for him.
When you're made in America, you get to be a Romney. You get to be like part of an Italian mafia system. You get to a huge house in Long Island. But when you're made in Russia, you get to have a fuck shack in the woods.
Yes.
So that's just one of the cultural differences.
The guy that was eventually arrested for the crime, he was executed for it.
And they straight up do that real quick.
Yeah.
When they like when in Russian law enforcement, if you're sentenced to death, it's literally like 3 days later and they just pop you in the back of the head.
Well, this
it's
guy
real
was
fast.
We eventually initially the judge saw that the case against this guy was very circumstantial. The judge gave him a comparatively lenient sentence at first.
Yeah.
But in Russian law at the time, you could not only appeal a conviction, you could also appeal a
sentence.
Yeah, you could appeal a sentence, and so due to pressure from the community, they appealed the sentence, and he was sentenced to death.
So I actually just watched Devil's Knot, which is the movie about the West Memphis Three individuals, and yeah, so they got caught up in this whole panic as well as a community for this one guy. And this, I mean, I'm assuming the guy that lived three doors down from Andre's sex shack wasn't great.
No.
He was probably kind of a schmuck.
You know, it wasn't like he was out there like helping kids with no legs like play baseball. That guy was probably also jerking off in front of like some kind of like any sort of general store.
Right.
But he wasn't guilty of that specific crime.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they did arrest him while he was stealing a car.
But again, stealing a car and raping and murdering a 6-year-old.
I thought that was the Rostov's public transportation. I thought you had a hot wire, a fucking guinea track. I don't know what they're called. Like those little like golf carts that they have everywhere.
I mean, to be fair, they just found him carrying a wheel and they were like, that's close enough. It's close enough to a Russian car.
On the wheel, that's 1/4 of car. You could sit on the wheel. It's almost like stealing chair.
The Yugo, right?
The Yugo.
That was a Russian vehicle.
Yeah.
That was a form of war. By the way,
the Yugo.
Yeah, they killed millions, tens of thousands of Americans died in the Yugo.
So Andre's second murder, and this is the one where he almost—I mean, unlike a lot of other guys who eventually get more and more comfortable with it—Andre goes from first murder being panicked to second murder being totally cool with it.
And again, we see this is a 3-year delay in between the first two murders. It's exactly like Dahmer.
Yeah.
The massive cooling off period. Apparently he left there and basically like he was like, I don't want to kill again. I'm just going to try and be normal with my family. But that just didn't work.
Yep. Well, you know, there hasn't been a repeat Super Bowl winner since 1999 in the NFL. So it's just difficult to go back-to-back years, you know?
So on September 3rd, 1981, Andre picked up a girl named Larissa Tichenko. She was 17. He picked her up at a bus stop, which is going to be another one of his MOs, picking up kids at the bus.
Right.
Because the bus system, like the public transportation system in Russia, is notoriously unreliable and unpredictable.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird to think because it seems like bus drivers in Russia must be like on the ball.
Oh, totally sober at all times.
And in Rostov, where a lot of these happen, where this one definitely happened, there was just a large supply of runaways and drug addicts, a lot of teenagers, and just generally people who felt like they had absolutely nothing to lose. Andre promised this girl vodka. He's like, let's go drink some vodka and relax. And so he led her out into the woods and held her down and she started screaming, and he started just shoving mud into her mouth to keep her quiet. He beat her. He choked her to death. He ejaculated in his pants. And as soon as she died, he bit off one of her nipples. He bit it off, which is something that he would do over and over again. And of course, this one, the feeling that he had in this one was pure joy. He grabbed her clothes.
Did it like Eddie Murphy, like, I'm in love, we're in love, like that, like run down the street.
Party all the time, party all the time.
He grabbed her clothes. He started throwing them around. He did a little dance around the body, whooping and hollering. Once he calmed down, and this would be, he has a sort of strange ritual that would escalate and would, evolve throughout the years. But he did have a strange ritual of dancing around the body after he killed them.
Yeah.
And that is just, that's just straight morbid.
You know what I mean? It is morbid, yeah.
And that's really strange.
I mean, I think if we did transplant, get the baby out of the picture, but we just take Ciccatello dancing and put him into a string cheese incident concert, he would probably look like real cool.
also, if we did a thing, you know, if he had just draped himself with the dead body and was dancing around and his name was Lady Gaga, he would have gotten scot-free with the thing because of the way fashion's going these days.
This guy could have been a comedian, he could have been a pop star, but unfortunately he was born in Hormidor.
During the Holodomor.
Holodomor?
He was in the Ukraine.
He was in the Ukraine. Just say Ukraine.
So after this, he calms down and he immediately starts rationalizing it in his brain. She deserved it. She was going to come with me for sex anyway. She was a loose woman. He started to think of himself as an exterminator, and thus a missionary killer is born.
They always do.
Yeah, I mean, and he starts thinking of stuff much like Gary Ridgway that he is exterminating the dregs of society. That
and now
he
you
is
have
put
the
here as a purpose.
And then you have the perfect recipe for literally one of the most brutal serial killers ever. And we'll get into the majority of his crimes next week. But he is just, it's the perfect package. Like missionary killer, highly evolved sexual impulse put into his killings and a feeling of invincibility and superior. He is, he's a fucking real monster.
I mean, it goes to, everyone feels like they're doing good.
Yeah.
You know, and no one wants to think that they're an actual monster. So you have to twist reality to such a degree to think that you're actually doing a public service.
Yeah.
Part of being a serial killer is being a validation machine. You have to create the reality in which you can exist, because that's the idea, is that you're building your own reality. Dahmer's most specifically, when he talks about like building his fucking, like his worship room and the altar and all that shit, it's that you're making reality for yourself.
Right. Terrible.
Yeah, so this
guy
was decidedly not cool.
None of these people are cool. They're monsters and extremely stupid individuals.
But this guy was just, you know, it's just an example. You know, you have an old man who comes to your house and he says like, "Oh, please let me come inside. Oh, my knees aren't the arms
full
you
know
of bones." If you have an old man that wants to come in your house, just don't let him, because he's gonna try and grab you till he comes in his pants.
Well, if you do let him into your house, break both of his knees before he gets in the front door.
Yes.
You got to cripple him, and then it's fine.
And next week we're going to get into the next 8 years of Chikatilo's life, in which he will murder an additional 54 people.
Right. He goes on a run.
It's bad, man.
Yeah.
He's a bad fella. But he also
make sure
speaks.
You check out A to Z Thursdays on NBC, starting October 2nd.
And don't be a communist. Do not
be a communist.
Don't
be a fucking communist. They're not going to help you, bro.
No, it's not. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. And
hell yes.
Of course, go to the Facebook page and send the messages over at Cave Comedy Radio.
CaveComedyRadio@gmail.com. Go to, if you would like a Last Podcast t-shirt, and I'll admit there is a bit of a delay on the t-shirts right now because we're having because the design is so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the detail.
We're really working with a mom and pop company. So it's like, this shit's done, it's going to be done. It's being done very soon. We're having a test print done today, and it is going to be very high quality.
Absolutely.
And if you want your own shirt, go to cavecomedyradio.com/lastpodcast on the left. And if you donate $25 or more in the U.S., $40 or more international, you will get a free Last Podcast on the Left t-shirt. And don't forget about the Cave Comedy Radio Sausage Party on October 5th. It's going to be starting about 3 p.m. Cooking some sausages and bratwurst in the backyard.
Yeah.
Then we're going to have a sweet-ass multimedia podcast show that will not be recorded. It will only exist once. Then we're going to go upstairs for a stand-up show featuring all of your Cave Comedy, favorite Cave Comedy Radio personalities. We're going to have the trial, the mystery pooper, the roundtable trial.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're going to round it all out with an hour-long set from the Cowmen, featuring myself, Hold McNeely, Doug Austin, Devin Castaldi, and Carly Goodspeed downstairs at about 10 o'clock.
And if you play your cards right, Eddie will probably try to kiss you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
it's
going to be his birthday as well.
Yes.
And I guarantee you, much like Chikatilo, he won't be hard.
It's the whiskey that does it.
And sniff around your schools if you're in the if you're in universities or college. See if there's any bad ones out there, some bad teachers.
Oh, and if you want to hear more shows with me and Ben, go to cavecomedyradio.com and listen to the Roundtable of Gentlemen and Abe Lincoln Stop At.
That's also, I will say that this I would say that Andre Chikatilo is the direct opposite to the Van Halen song Hot for Teacher.
You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right, everybody. Hail yourselves.
All right.
Hail Satan. Hail my sweet, sweet Dark Lord Satan, and thank him for his gifts.
That's right.
Megustalations.
I'm sorry. That was intense. Megustalations.
Help me!
We'll talk to you soon.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.